Set here for a visual check if you're go for EVA, over.
Roger, Columbus 1. Control requests you secure exterior cameras ASAP. The folks down here want to see you on TV, over.
Roger, Houston, beginning EVA. Breaking airlock seal. I can see the light. We are got a clear shot of the landscape now. Beautiful. Look at that sky. I am making my way out the portal. Houston, making my way to the Martian surface. It is a small drop for a man. A giant dipstick.
Houston to Columbus 1. Houston to Columbus 1. Come in, Columbus 1. We've lost transmission. Can you read? Please respond. Over.
Roger, Houston. Lost my footing there. Martian gravity, very unique. Very unique. Should I start over, or can you edit that out? Over.
Roger, Columbus 1. We'll take care of it from down here. Still standing by for a visual. Over.
Houston, I copy. I am securing starboard camera. Should receive visual any time. Any now on the port side. It's a beautiful landscape out here. Beautiful landscape. Securing port camera now, Houston. Sending that signal. All functioning. Over.
Roger, Columbus 1. No signal yet. While waiting for visual, suggest you check starboard heat shield. Over.
Roger, Houston. Returning to starboard side. A beautiful Martian sky. Just beautiful. Landscape mostly rocky. Martian soil, powdery red, with very large footprints. Oh my God, they're taking...
Columbus 1, do you read? We've lost your carrier signal. Come in, Columbus 1. Elaborate on footprints. Can you read us, Columbus 1? Over. Houston to Columbus 1, do you read? Over.
Houston, this is Columbus 1. Disregard that last transmission. Footprints were my own. Are you receiving visual? Over.
Roger, Columbus 1. Visual coming in clear. Control recommends you identify a piece of craft at 15 meters, 3 o'clock. Is this starboard heat shield? Over.
Negative, Houston. Heat shield is complete. Ship appears to be fully intact. Object at 3 o'clock is not ours, but is very large. It's very large, 25, 30 meters at least. Over.
Roger, Columbus 1. Request close-up inspection. Over.
Houston, I copy, but our view here is very clear from over here. Over. Safe and clear. Over.
Roger, understand, Columbus 1, but control strongly advises close-up inspection. Lieutenant, over.
Houston, I copy, and I am approaching large object. Object appears rather rectangular in shape. Object is rectangular in shape, I repeat. Object is not natural. Do you read me, Houston? Object is not natural. That is definite. Over.
Roger, Columbus 1, we copy and recommend you proceed. Over.
Roger, Houston, am continuing to close in on alien object. Very large, very rectangular, like a monolith. I can't believe it. It's just huge. Wait a minute. Monolith appears to have markings.
Roger, Columbus 1, can you read markings? Over.
Affirmative, Houston, this is incredible. It's gibberish, but it is definitely English. Definitely English. Message states, and I quote, doesn't make sense, but message states, mystery playout.
No. There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want. Because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Power Records presents The Mark of the Man-Wolf. The Amazing Spider-Man has many friends, but Jonah Jameson, publisher of the powerful Daily Bugle, isn't one of them.
What is this, Robertson? Be kind to criminals, they?
Now, Jonah, all I said was we'd better be sure about our facts before we publicly condemn Spider-Man. If it turns out he is innocent...
Innocent? Maybe you don't understand, Robertson. A man has been killed. A man who happened to be a good friend of mine. And I believe that wall-crawling menace is responsible. I know it. So get this, Robertson. Since I can't hire someone to bring that killer in, I intend to see justice done another way, by making the public demand his capture at once.
I'm only your city editor, Jonah, but I think you're making a grave mistake.
Wait a second, Robbie. We've got company.
I'll talk to you later then, Jonah.
Hi, Dad. Thought I'd drop by to pick you up for dinner. It's time you met my fiancée, Christine Saunders.
Fiancée? Well, I must say, it's about time. We were finished, weren't we, Robbie?
If you say so, Jonah. I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Sorry, Robbie. This is my son, John. John's just retired from astronautics. He was one of the last men to make a moonwalk. Son, this is Joe Robertson, my city editor.
Glad to meet you, John.
Same here, Mr. Robertson. Sorry we've got to rush off.
Moments later, in the hall outside.
Dad, would you excuse me a moment?
John, are you all right, son? You're white as a sheet and you're trembling.
I'm sorry, Dad. Got a touch of the flu.
The flu? You better take care of yourself, John.
Like I said, Dad, sorry. I've been under a strain. I'd better get home.
Later the same evening, in a brownstone overlooking the Hudson River, a door opens, releasing a sliver of yellow light and the stumbling form of a young man.
Nothing I can do. It's happening again. I'm changing! Changing!
And in several seconds, we see before us a man-wolf. Whoever was present in this creature a moment ago is back. Now there is only an animal seeking someone. It runs through the darkness. Now and then it climbs and leaps from roof to roof as it hunts its quarry. And that quarry is man, one particular human. A head, the man-wolf thinks. The one I hunt is a head. One final leap, and he looks across at the human being he seeks. And in one sleek motion, the man-wolf leaps.
What in the name of heaven? Who are you? What's the meaning of this? Do you realize who I am? The name is Jonah Jameson, my friend. And I'll have you know, J. Jonah Jameson is not the kind of man to be amused by some sort of infantile. I demand an explanation for this ridiculous costume. I'm warning you.
It is then, of course, that Jameson realizes the creature before him is not wearing a costume. And it is then, naturally, that J. Jonah Jameson becomes afraid. And by then, you see, it's already far too late.
Good Lord in heaven! No!
We hate to leave J. Jonah Jameson at a time like this. But a few minutes earlier, in another part of the city, Peter Parker, boy student, who is otherwise known as Spider-Man, is passing a newsstand. One glimpse of the Daily Bugle and...
That does it. This time, Jameson's gone too far. The Spider-Man Menace, a new series by J. Jonah Jameson. Every time something happens in this town, Jameson blames me. According to Mr. Warm, Spider-Man should be hunted down like a mad dog. Innocent till proven guilty. Remember that, Jameson? That's supposed to be the way we live. Why don't you leave me alone, Jameson? Why don't you leave me alone? I've had it, Jameson. You want me guilty? You've got it. I'll show you a menace, Jameson. You just better hope your insurance is paid up, buddy. Because, mister, you're gonna need it. I never asked to be bitten by that blasted radioactive spider. But I was, JJJ. And I've tried to make the best of it. But you just won't see that, will you? Maybe after tonight you'll be a little saner, JJJ. Maybe after you get a taste of what my webbing can really do, you'll leave me alone.
In some people, anger can burn for hours. But in others, it lasts only a minute or two. That's the way it is with Spider-Man, sometimes. Luckily for J. Jonah Jameson, this is one of those times. By coincidence, Spider-Man seems to have arrived at Jameson's apartment just at the right moment.
Now, that's a kick in the head. Either Jameson's taken to keeping pets or... Oh, I just saw a werewolf.
Spider-Man, you're in this too.
In case you hadn't noticed, Williams, I just saved your life. Say, Jonah, if I didn't think you were so lovable, I'd say White Fang here had a grudge against you. Think about it, Jameson. Have you insulted any werewolves lately? They don't scare me a bit. I've been spoiling for a good fight. It's about time I...
Our hero isn't faring too well. Look out, Spider-Man. Look out! Spider-Man, unconscious. It wouldn't be fair to call Jonah Jameson a coward, but at this moment, he is frightened halfway to death, but not frightened enough to resist a snarling man-wolf.
What do you want from me? What I mean? I've never done anything to you. I've never attacked you. Why did you pick me?
As though in answer, the man-wolf backs off, and Jameson's eyes draw down, and he sees what he has not seen before. Man stares at wolf, and wolf stares in turn, and something passes between the two. A wordless communication, a plea for help. Then, without another sound, the man-wolf springs from the window, leaving behind him one very quiet, middle-aged entrepreneur and a slowly stirring Spider-Man.
Hey, Jonah, what happened to tall, dark, and hairy? Don't tell me you beat him all by your lonesome. If that gets out, we'll have to put you up against the heavyweight champ. Say, what's the deal, Jameson? Where are those snappy comebacks?
You're not going after him, Spider-Man. I won't allow it.
You won't what? After that character tried to kill you?
That doesn't matter. It's not important. If you attack him, I'll make you pay, you wall-crawling menace.
Look, I'm not your biggest fan, but that monster...
Spider-Man, I swear to you, if you move one muscle against that creature, I'll report this as an attempt on my life by you. Am I clear?
Loud and clear. Next time, remind me not to play Good Samaritan. Some people have a weird sense of gratitude.
Grateful? How can I be grateful to the man I hate most in the world? How can I be grateful when the mad killer he saved me from is my son?
Hours pass. The man wolf leaps and lunges from roof to roof, searching. It can sense its prey. It seems like no other the man wolf has ever sought. The one who attacked me, who sought to kill me, he is there. The one who must die.
Funny. We started this evening all knotted up. Now I feel kind of loose. It was the fight with the man-wolf. Somehow it released all my tensions, worked out all my anger. Almost. I can dig the world.
You spoke too soon, Spider-Man. Too soon.
Oh, no, not the man-wolf again. What are you doing here? Guess you're looking for a fight. Look out! You're pushing us over the edge. We're going to fall. Look, this werewolf bit some sort of stunt. Jameson worked up some blasphemy in that crummy newspaper of his, but even JJJ couldn't pay a man to go this far, not to the point of suicide. Yes, for real, Funky, which doesn't quite explain why you wanted to attack me.
But then, as our puzzled hero chances to glance down at his struggling assailant.
Wait a minute. Pendant. I've seen it before. But where? I can't remember where. Huh? Whoops. I blew it. Lost my attention, my grip, and next on the list is my life.
But a new element is added to the picture.
The moon. It's setting. And if I know my legends, that means you're due for a transformation. Just as I thought. As soon as you realize what's going to happen when the moon goes down, you split. Sorry, pal. You're not getting off that easy. Suddenly, you've caught my interest with that pendant thing. And there's no way I'm letting you slip out of my hands until... Knock on the head you gave me a couple of hours ago in Jameson's pad. Oh, my head. Come on, Parker, you've got to snap out of it. You've got to think. Where have you seen that pendant before? Where? Where? Where?
Though he isn't aware of it, our hero is on the right track, and so is a certain publisher.
This is my son's apartment. All I can do is pray that I brought. John? Son, are you there? Blasted boy, answer me! Oh, dear Lord, that costume. I'd recognize it anywhere. It's true, then. My son is a man-wolf. John, wake up! I demand an explanation, at once!
Dad, is that you?
Of course it's me, John, and I'm alone. Now, will you tell me what's happened to you? What sort of insanity?
I wish I were insane, Dad. It'd be easier to accept than this.
For a moment, Jonah J. Jameson stares at the man he calls his son. And when he speaks again, his voice is softer.
Tell me, John. Please. I want to tell.
If only you could. There's nothing you or anyone can do. This is my nightmare. I've got to get out of it myself, just as I got into it, all by myself.
It all started 6 months ago at Cape Canaveral with the takeoff of a special unscheduled moon flight. It was the same as the previous public moon flight in every way, that is, but one. I found something on the moon's surface. A rock. The strangest rock I'd ever seen. Right then, I was determined that it would be mine. Back on Earth, I had a friend who worked in the quarantine center. With a little coaxing, I got him to borrow the moon rock for me. I had my rock made into a pendant, and I took to wearing it around my neck. Didn't think much about it at first, until one night, I was taking the turnpike up to New York for a late dinner date with my fiancée, Christine. Something happened to me. Something inexplicable.
That's funny. Suddenly I feel tired, exhausted. Mustn't be getting enough sleep. Either that or it's this blasted night driving.
It wasn't the night driving. It was the moon. The sudden light touched me. I glanced up, and it was then that it began. The pendant, glowing, something about the moon.
Lord in heaven, what's happening to me?
Every month since then, I've been transformed. And to date, none of my efforts to stop that transformation have succeeded. Not even the radiation suit I had made to cut out the lunar rays. The first time I wore it, last night, the suit came apart. Just like my chances to see this madness through alive.
Don't talk like that, son. It's obvious you haven't thought this out at all. Why not just take off the pendant?
Don't you think I've thought of that, Dad? I have tried to remove the stone, but it's too late. It's grafted itself to my skin, permanently.
7 hours have passed.
7 hours? And now it's time to get on the trail of the man-wolf.
In another part of the city, at that certain brownstone, we find...
It's not like John to ignore a date. I hope he isn't sick. He has been acting oddly these past few weeks. That's funny. And I can hear the bell ringing upstairs. And if that isn't John up in the window, I need glasses. He wants to pretend I'm not here? All right, I'm not here.
And upstairs.
Now it's your turn, Dad. Better leave. Something changes in me when I become that thing. I want to hurt the people I love, like Christine. And like you.
Now, son, if you're trying to tell me the reason you attacked me was to kill me, that's utter nonsense. You wanted my help. Don't you see that, John? And you couldn't stop yourself. Your animal self from...
Meanwhile, a few blocks away, Spider-Man starts on his moonlight journey. Hurry, Spider-Man, hurry!
Great, what a good night's sleep can do. I almost feel like myself again. Now, what was going through my mind? A pendant. Hey, wait a minute. My subconscious must have been working overtime because it just put two and two together and came up with four. That costume the man-wolf was wearing, it wasn't fabric. It was some sort of insulation material, the kind used on spacesuits for astronauts. And it just hit me who I know that has an astronaut son. And who was attacked by a werewolf in astronaut clothing? J. Jonah Jameson.
A quick glance in the Manhattan telephone directory tells our hero what he needs to know, and so...
Maybe I'll have some good luck for a change. Bingo! Looks like I've hit the jackpot. It's the man wolf. Here we go again, Wolfie. This time, I have a theory to try out. It's my guess that pendant is what's making you a werewolf. And so it has to come off. Even if I have to tear it off.
Spider-Man, what's happening to him? He's changing.
Dear Lord, I didn't realize. The pendant had grafted itself onto his skin.
The transformation begins, and the identity of the monster becomes apparent. All too painfully apparent.
John, son, are you all right?
He's just fine, Jameson, now that this thing's off him. Better get him a doctor, though. Fast.
Doctor? But the publicity.
Publicity? Your son's life was at stake, not to mention the lives of people he might have killed. Let's hope we stopped him in time.
Johnny, are you okay? Mr. Jameson, is he okay?
Answer her, Jameson. Tell her everything's real swell. Maybe someday you'll even begin to believe it yourself.
Spider-Man, wait, I...
Save it for the papers, Jonah. Save it for tomorrow.
And so ends another adventure of the Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, dearie. Vampirella, wasn't that scary?
Oh, yes, such webbed intrigue. It's just almost too much on a Sunday. I tell you, that Peter Parker, he's a swell guy, isn't he?
He just gives me the creeps, the very thought of it.
Oh, exciting creeps, though.
Oh, very exciting, very exciting. I like the web slinger motif. It is a very beautiful.
Yes, there's nothing like a Spider-Man, you know?
Never, never. Well, we have even more scary entertainment for you this week on Mystery Playhouse. This time, a speaker, primarily of Les Parker Speaks to America. On the count, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Les Leonard calling America. Les Leonard calling America. Come in, America. It's time once again to play Land a Million.
And here he is. Speaking direct from the control tower at Fairfax Field, your host, Les Leonard.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And welcome to another round of Land a Million. Before we begin, let me just take time out to explain the game to you newcomers. The contestant is presently circling above us in a Boeing 707. With her in the plane is $1 million and a ton of TNT. Now, when I give the signal, the pilot will bail out, leaving the contestant, who has never flown before, alone at the controls. I'll be in radio contact with her and will ask her a series of questions. For every question she answers correctly, she'll receive additional instructions on how to fly her Boeing 707. If she can land the plane, she keeps the $1 million, but it's a race against the clock because the plane carries only 30 minutes worth of fuel. And since we've already used up two of those precious minutes, without further ado, let's get this game off the ground and start the questions flying. Calling today's contestant, Mrs. Rena Lenski of Terrytown, New York. Come in, Mrs. Lenski. Over. I am talking to you, Mrs. Lenski. Which category have you decided on?
I'm going to pick heroes and villains, Les.
I read you loud and clear. Okay, Gil, turn on the automatic pilot and hit the silk. There he goes. It's all your baby now, Mrs. Lenski. Are you nervous? As well you might be, with less than 27 minutes remaining. So get ready for question number one. If you answer it correctly, I will tell you how to operate the wheel, or stick as it's called in the trade. Captain Nemo, the inventor of the electric submarine, appears in what novel by Jules Verne? Right you are! Now, pay attention, Mrs. Lenski. You push the wheel in to descend and pull it back to climb. That's in to go down and back to go up. Is that clear? Over.
I think so.
Question number two. Get this right and I'll tell you where to locate and how to work your landing gear switch.
The Hero of Arrowsmith by Sinclair Lewis is a physician named Martin Arrowsmith. What was his wife's name? Over. The name of Martin Arrowsmith's wife.
Her name was Leora Arrowsmith. Well, I'm afraid I can't tell you anything about the landing gear, but if you can answer this next one, we'll spread foam on the runway. This could make all the difference, Mrs. Lenski, so take your time before answering.
In Eugene O'Neill's The Emperor Jones, from whom is Jones running? Who is he trying to get away from? Over.
My card says the West Indians he had exploited. I'll have to ask the judges for a ruling. They say yes. So we'll take a break right here while the trucks are foaming the runway for this brief message. Okay, we're back and all set to play round two of Land a Million. Contestant Rena Lenski is circling above me with only 11 minutes of fuel left. If she can answer this question, I'll tell her where to find the altimeter. Attention, Mrs. Lenski.
In which of the following plays by Thornton Wilder does George Gibbs marry Emily Webb? The Matchmaker, The Skin of Our Teeth, or Our Town? Over.
That's it. The altimeter is the dial with two hands that's just to the left of the airspeed indicator. Have you got it?
Yes.
The last question, and an important one. Get it right, and I'll tell you how to operate the flaps.
Bess, the landlord's daughter, and the treacherous ostler Tim appear in what narrative poem by Alfred Noyes? Over.
Well, take a guess. I'm sorry, Mrs. Lenski. It was The Highwayman. A very well-known poem. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, so you'd better try to bring her down with what information you have. Summing up, you know how to work the stick, you know where the altimeter is, you won't have any landing gear, but you did win a foamed runway, and you'll have no control of the all-important flaps. However, since you've been such a good contestant, I'm going to give you this bonus flying tip. That lever with the big knob on your right is the throttle. And now, Mrs. Rena Lenski of Terrytown, New York, are you ready to land a million? Over.
Right? No, I need more time. I don't want the money. Just give me that.
A bit late for that. You have 4 minutes of fuel remaining, so start your descent.
She's turning now, making her approach. There's a brisk crosswind out there today, so it could be tricky.
Get your nose down, Mrs. Lenski. That's better. Now level off. Level off. Keep that wing up. Keep the nose down. You're coming in too hot. Ease up on the throttle. Keep her level. Okay, you're on your own. Over and out. Gil Schroyer, our staff pilot, has just joined us. What do you think of her chances, Gil?
Not much, Les. She's coming in too steep, too fast.
Any possibility she could pull out?
No, but not without flaps, no way.
Well, no doubt about it. Those flaps would be a big plus right around now. She also appears to be having some trouble. Well, it looks like Mrs. Lenski has blown it. Be with us again next week for Land a Million. And don't forget to join us on weekdays when we play Land a Grand, where contestants try to bring in Piper Cubs, chock full of cash prizes, household appliances, and nitroglycerin. Until then, this is the old barnstormer, Les Leonard, saying so long and happy landing.
Aircraft for today's show, courtesy of the Boeing Corporation.
Poor Mrs. Lenski, I'll tell you, Count, that was really scary, the poor woman.
Well, she gave it the fighting chance.
Well,
I always liked
her. I admired her until the very end, where she sort of chickened out and forgot about the money.
Well,
she was
a cool cucumber up to the very end.
Yeah.
I really admired the spirit.
Yeah, there's always another contestant next week.
You know me, spirits, I just love them. Anyway, you know, Vampirella, what the date is today?
Oh, it's my favorite date, the 13th.
Yes, the 13th. And the 13th means we have a very special Bravo Gala album to play.
Something special for the 13th.
Yes.
What is it, Count? Tell us.
It's a story of Dracula.
Oh, Dracula.
The Wolfman and Frankensteiner.
Or is it Steen?
Oh, who knows? Anyway, that's up very next, so you must make sure you have all the lights out for this. It's so scary.
That's right. Draw the curtains, folks. Don't let that sunlight in.
On the count, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The year is 1883. The hour is late, and the mood is fear, as two exhausted human beings crash through the underbrush and into a clearing. But there is no pause in their flight, for the baying of ravening hounds is hard on their heels.
Can't see the baying hounds. See they come.
No, Erica. Not if we can reach those trees yonder. Hurry, darling. Just a few paces more.
Hurry!
After an eternity of seconds.
That's it, darling. Climb up as high as you can.
Go ahead, hand holding. Now,
but the man knows his companion is not yet safe, and all caution is thrown aside as he reaches for a stout branch and prepares to defend his love when suddenly...
Oh!
And like a blanket, calm enfolds the once-enraged dogs, and they trot off, docile and tame as household pets, to the feet of their master.
Please, gentle folk, do not be afraid. The dogs will do you no harm. I am to blame entirely for this terrible incident. It was senseless of me to continue hunting after the sun had gone down. Forgive me. And please allow me to make this up to you in some way.
The stranger's voice is openly friendly, but not till Erica is safely on the ground does the man Vincent reply.
You are a gentleman, sir. But you may wish you had not so quickly called off your dogs when you learn who I am.
Then please tell me. I can stand the suspense no longer.
My name is Vincent. I am the nephew, the very proud nephew of Baron von Frankenstein. This is my fiancée, Erica.
In that case, you are the new Baron von Frankenstein, now that your uncle is dead, which entitles you to the simple hospitality of my home for as long as you may desire. Please accompany me. You must.
If you insist. You are very kind, and we are exhausted.
With his fiancée safely mounted on the horse of their new friend, the tension of the previous few days falls away, and soon the party comes in sight of a magnificent castle.
My hope, Baron von Frankenstein, and yours, for as long as you would like to stay.
You are too kind, sir. I fear you may not know of the events surrounding my uncle's death. I feel honor-bound to tell you of them before we cross the threshold of your home.
I know the events, Baron. His experiments, the monster he created, the destruction the monster caused, and finally the enraged villagers who caused the death of your uncle. But you are merely his nephew.
Aye, merely. But a Frankenstein, nevertheless. And tainted. The villagers were not satisfied to murder my uncle. They came to my home at the dinner hour. They howled in rage as they burned my home to the ground, and in greater rage as Erica and I escaped in the confusion. We have been pursued, hounded from that moment.
Ah, here we are. My home. There we are. As you are pleased, mademoiselle. This ordeal must have been terrifying for you. You must think a great deal of our young Baron.
I love him, sir. And if needs be, I will die beside him. If we can just keep them from finding our... Oh, Vincent.
What Erica is most worried about is that if it is discovered that I actually assisted my uncle at times and know all the secrets which supposedly died with him, our pursuers will double in number and surely destroy us.
Please, Baron. Enough of this depressing talk. You shall both live. And after a comfortable dinner, we shall sip wine before my great fireplace, and all this will seem as though it happened in another world.
Soon the new Baron Frankenstein calmly bathes. A calm which is broken by...
Erica!
Quickly, Vincent pulls on his pants and runs from the room.
Erica! Erica, where are you? Erica!
You need go no further, Baron. What you seek is through this door.
Erica, is she in there? I thought I heard her scream. Was it Erica?
His newfound friend stands in mute silence. Finally, Vincent brushes roughly past him and into the indicated room.
What is this? It seems...
Like a blast of cold air, the full impact of the room strikes Vincent Frankenstein. The room, except for minor differences, is the duplicate of his uncle's laboratory. The room in which his uncle created what became known as Frankenstein's monster.
Explain this. No. First tell me where Erica is.
Calm down, my good Baron. This laboratory represents my failure at the same experiment your uncle succeeded at. The same experiments you will succeed at if you ever expect to see your beloved again alive.
In a blind rage, Vincent rushes past his betrayer.
Look for her if you will, fool! This castle has hundreds of rooms, dozens of tunnels, and miles of labyrinthian dungeons and torture chambers. She would starve before you could find her. That is if I put her in an obvious place, and not behind some secret panel somewhere. No, Baron Frankenstein, you will not search for your missing Erica. You will build me a man, a slave to my will, and do start now, or your beloved Erica will never see the light of a new day.
All right, I'll do it.
To escape the torture of not knowing, Vincent hurls himself into his sleepless work, creating a living man from dead bodies, which his now hated enemy supplies in abundance.
No more bodies. I have all the parts I need. Where do you get all these bodies? And in such good condition? In heaven's name, man.
I hear we want you to be happy. I wouldn't supply you with inferior material. Am I correct in assuming that we are at the final stage?
You are correct. But we will never complete that final stage until and unless I see Erica safe and unharmed. If I don't, I'll...
Baron, please don't get overly dramatic. Move your dials and gadgets like a good boy. And if you look to my left, you see your fiancé. Safe.
Oh, Vincent.
Enough! My, assistants will guard your Erica as you work, Baron. Do not make any false moves. But you kid, make no mistake about that. I am too resolved to be stopped by false heroics. Move!
With practiced fingers, young Baron Frankenstein manipulates his panel and finally throws the switch that controls the raw electricity. As the machinery dies down, Vincent cranks the reclining body to an upright position.
Is he alive? Is he good? He's not moving, not breathing.
Give it some time. It could be hours before we know.
An eyelid flutters open as the two men talk.
Luke! Good Lord. He's alive and enraged.
His brain inflamed, the patchwork creature stumbles forward as his creator tries to restrain him.
Stop! Sit down! Stop!
Stop him, guards! Stop him, or it'll mean your deaths!
The two robed guards release Erica and lurch toward the raging creature.
Subdue him, Paytons, before he reaches the door!
But brute force cannot stop this monster. He smashes one guard and hurls the other with all his strength into the wall. And now he pauses. No one bars his path but the frail and beautiful Erica. Slowly he raises his eyes to hers and again moves forward.
No! Stay away from her!
Who can know the thoughts this monster has as he approaches and now lifts the girl from the cold stone and over his head?
No!
Who can say if he thinks at all as he steps to the window ledge and hurls the girl to her death and walks away from this now silent room, leaving a man whose mind reels and heart shrivels in his chest?
Erica! Erica! She's dead. No, she's moving, I think. Oh, help her, help her. She's alive, but broken. She looks so helpless. Count, this is your doing. Help her, please. I'll do anything to repay you. Please, I beg of you.
Without a word, the evil host steps up to the window, raises his face to the moon, and parts his lips. First, an answering growl drifts upward. Then a shadow breaks free from the darkness of the forest and trots quickly to the side of the moaning Erica. As it becomes more distinct to Vincent's unbelieving eyes, his worst dreams become reality. It has the form of a wolf, but its gray color, its bearing, implies a more fearsome presence. The presence of the werewolf.
It's attacking her. And she's helpless. No! No! Good Lord!
In his hysterical state, Vincent hardly feels the hand which steals behind his neck and clenches. There is a brief shock as he slips nerveless to the floor, and blackness enfolds him. Back on the ground, Erica has survived the attack of the werewolf, and though unconscious, her breathing is regular.
There she is.
She seems so still.
Don't worry, she's alive. Talk, Bela. Gather her up and bring her along.
Yes, Grandmother. All right. We've got her.
She's very beautiful, Grandmother.
Yes. Now,
Hours later, Erica slowly regains consciousness.
Oh. Come, come, child, wake up. You have slept long enough. There is much to do. Wake up.
Oh, where am I? How did I get here? Oh, I've had such nightmares. What is happening to me?
You are in a gypsy camp, and I am Maliva, queen of the gypsies. And you are here to serve and make your place till the end of your days.
What? What are you saying? Oh, Vincent! Vincent, where are you? I need you! This is insane. Please, tell me, this is all a dream.
Girl, silence. This is no dream, nor will it end. You will stay here, and you will work, or you will be beaten till you beg for mercy. Now, go, and begin your chores, or so help me. The beatings will begin right now.
Move along.
All through the morning and hot afternoon, Erica toils under the cruel discipline of Bela, Maliva's grandson, as Maliva herself watches with a baleful eye.
That's it. Make her work for her king.
As the sun goes down, Erica is allowed to rest, chained. Weariness brings its own security, and as she begins to doze off on the ground behind one of the wagons, she fails to hear the clumsy footfalls until...
Vincent, who is that?
Please, Missy, please, it's me, sure. I would not harm you. You are like a flower. I have brought some broth. I will... Please, if you wish me to, I just thought.
Oh, no talk. Don't leave. You're right. I do need some food. Thank you.
Your hand. The pentagram!
Dropping the broth, Torque spins and rushes away from the helpless female, naked fear etched upon his face.
Torque, what is it? Why do you run?
The pentagram! The pentagram! And the moon is full today!
Erica looks at her hand and the symbol of the pentagram which now appears there. Her mind drifts back to a poem she once heard. Even a man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the moon is shining bright. Some say Bela is insane, and the menacing whip he carries adds to this theory. Why would he beat a chained and helpless prisoner? Why does he wait till the night to accomplish his loathsome ends? As he steps into the shadows, he hears a sound which tells him that never again need these questions be asked. The sound of the werewolf.
No! No, stay away!
Bela turns to run.
Ah!
His intended victim, Erica, strikes him down with one deadly blow. No more a frail human woman. In her stead, a full-grown, enraged werewolf. Almost immediately, Bela's cry brings the gypsies from their wagons.
Werewolf!
Werewolf!
There it is!
Everyone, attack!
Grab her! Pull her down! She can't fight all of us! Get her!
Erica's rage drives them back momentarily. Suddenly, a new sound attracts everyone's attention. Recognition fills the gypsies' eyes, and they step aside to reveal A second werewolf. A powerful gray werewolf who now rumbles its challenge to Erica. The gray wolf attacks with the speed of thought, and soon the two half-human canines are locked in mortal combat. The savagery of their battle is insane, as every new wound they inflict repairs itself almost immediately. Unnoticed, a figure stirs in the shadows, and a grim Bela rises from the dust. Determination to gain revenge drives him to raise his pistol, and with his last breath, fire the silver bullet at Erica. It strikes the gray wolf. Confused, Erica stands and stares as the gray wolf becomes the gray Maliva. More guns and more silver bullets come into the hands of the gypsies. Erica flees into the woods. Somewhere in her animal mind, she realizes that these gypsies have battled werewolves before. So she runs. Leaving her pursuers far behind, her flight soon brings her to a somehow familiar castle. A castle whose sight draws her closer and urges her to enter. Easily, her animal form clambers to an upper window that looks into a deserted hallway. She pauses, sniffing the air, then jumps to the floor onto all fours. She scans her surroundings at a glance, then begins padding toward the only light source, which is at the end of the hall. Human voices alert Erica, who approaches more slowly now.
It's no use. We'll never capture him.
Stop whining, you fool! You've lost your blood, but not yet your life. The monster's had a full day to calm down. Help me restrain him, or you will spend yet another day in my dungeon, Baron Frankenstein.
That voice pounds in her ears. That hated voice must be stilled forever. Utter rage controls Erica's canine body as she hurls herself upon the master of this castle. But Erica is thrown from him as though she were a puppy.
You dare! You dare lay your paws on me! On me! Low beast, you'll die for this! Die at the hands of the Prince of Darkness! For I am Dracula!
Oh, my lord, what have I done?
You, Baron Frankenstein, have done nothing but obey my will into my bidding, as I compelled you to do.
The monster stands quietly and listens also.
Do you know why you created this monster? This slave for me? Did you for 1 minute question what I would do with this creature? For this reason, Frankenstein, I am helpless in the daytime. Like a sleeping babe, I need a strong, mindless slave to protect my sleep so that I might wake at night and proud for the blood that sustains me. The blood of innocent victims to quench my undying thirst.
As though awakened from a long sleep, the monster's lip curls and he reaches out to grasp the throat of Dracula. Lifting the vampire into the air, he effortlessly dashes into the ground. Horror stretches the eyes of Vincent Frankenstein as the vampire, unhurt, rises, revealing an evil grin, and attacks the man-made monster and claws for its throat. But this is no mere mortal creature. This man-thing was born of the elements. His superhuman hands clamp once again on the throat of Dracula. Silently, each squeeze the throat of the other. Untiring fingers probe past neck muscles, seeking windpipe, spine, arteries. Panic seizes Dracula, and he begins to transform himself into a giant bat.
Go! I'm free!
Dracula frees himself and flies upward and toward Vincent, intent on escape. The face of Erica flashes through Vincent's mind. Grim determination sets his jaw as he reaches for an urn of burning embers and hurls it full in the face of Dracula. Screaming in pain, he flies upward, circles, then dives straight into the monster. Tumbling into the laboratory, the two figures smash into chemicals and equipment, which ignite into a blazing inferno.
Fire! Tremendous heat! I'll be burned alive. Maybe it would be just as well. Without Erica, I might as well be dead. No, I can't lose hope. She might still be alive.
But as Vincent turns to leave...
The werewolf blocking my path. It's confused by the fire. It'll doom us both if it doesn't move. No! I must try to reason with it. Wolf, listen to me. That fire will kill us. We must go. I can show you the way. We'll die if we stay here.
Slowly, rational thought lights the werewolf's eyes.
Don't you understand? It's stepping aside, letting me pass. It does understand. Must hurry before those chemicals explode. Hurry, Wolf, hurry. The flames are spreading. We only have seconds. We made it. No, don't stop. The whole place is about to collapse. There she goes.
Like a thing of beauty, the castle mushrooms upward and then collapses in upon itself.
'Tis done. And now, Wolf, what of the two of us? Will you try to devour... What? Something's happening. You're changing. Transforming. Becoming... familiar. Oh, Lord. Erica! Erica, my darling! How can this be? No. No, 'tis enough. You are here. Here. Put on my cloak.
Oh, Vincent, it was horrible. Horrible. I can hardly bring myself to think of it.
Don't think about it for a while. Just think that we are safe and alive and that the sun is rising on a new day. Our day. You mean your werewolfism. My love, do not fear it. I know a man, a doctor, who has cured this condition. We shall find him. And we shall defeat this thing together. We have come through a night of unending terror, and it has come to an end.
Oh, that was so scary.
Oh, yes, but such a sweet love story, Count. You have to admit that.
Too bad that he had a phony Count accent. Anyone could tell he was the fraud.
Oh, yes, but it was theater, and once again, it was such a sweet love story.
Yes, I know, but who cares for love when there's death and violence to be committed about?
Oh, Count, grow up, will you? Well, hello once again out there, everyone. This is Vampirilla. You can call me Vamp for short, along with my favorite, the Count. And we're having a good time this Sunday. Hope you are, too. Got lots of good goodies in store for you coming up.
Oh, yes. In fact, we have a special, without interruption, classic coming up. It is The Further Adventures of, no, not Nick Danger, but David Osman.
Oh,
and
that's right.
Time flies. But first, a brief documentary on the condition of taconite in our country. On the count, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Minnesota Land Invasion presents, without commercial interruption, Six Gun Fury. But first, a brief documentary about the state of taconite today. Here's Earl Willis.
Taconite. What is it? And who's asking? Well, you if you're smart. And some 200 million Americans should be asking this question. What is taconite? Well, try to imagine a world without taconite for a minute. Hard to do, isn't it? Hard to imagine a world without transistor radios, chain-link fences, ultra-thin TVs, and orgasms. So where does taconite come from? Who better to ask than Sven Foosball, taconite foreman?
It comes from the ground, there.
From the ground and into our homes, taconite has always been the uninvited guest. Let's go back in time to find out why. The year is 1801, in the lush forest not yet known as California, but soon to be called Minnesota. Lewis and Clark have just gone by in their birch canoes. Our pioneer forefathers were there, and taconite was there too, in the ground, waiting. Waiting for the year 1862, a year when everyone in America was worried. Everyone, that is, except Mickey Bitsko, Minnesota farmer.
Giddy up there, bossy.
He was plowing the field on March 2nd, 1862, when his plow hit a lump just under the topsoil.
Hey up there, bossy. What the hell there? Oh, a big lump of something. I don't know.
Excited by his discovery, Mickey brought it home.
Henrietta, look here. I found it under the topsoil there. A big lump of something.
Don't bring that thing in here.
Well, it's big.
It's dirty.
It's big and dirty.
Mickey brought the lump into town.
Whoa, up there, bossy.
And strolled with it into the assay office.
Hey, just a big lump of something.
All right, let me see it.
What is that there?
Why, man, this is taconite.
Oh, my gosh.
Taconite. And it was only 3 months later that three city slickers rolled onto Mickey Bitsko's farm.
Hiya there, want some coffee?
Three men with a smile.
Henrietta, company!
Forged ownership papers.
Sure, that's my name.
And a dream.
Oh, golly, I sold the farm.
A dream of progress. A dream of strip mines.
Oh, golly.
This was a dream to be dreamed by a different kind of pioneer.
Oh, golly.
Tough luck for Mickey Bitsko.
Too bad.
Good luck for Minnesota land invasion.
We go to Las Vegas.
Giddy up there, Henrietta.
I go to win a new harness.
And today, in the 20th century, we here at Minnesota Land Invasion still believe in that dream. Let's follow taconite foreman Sven Foosball as he shows us around the plant.
Earl, this is the conveyor belt there, you know, where the taconite lumps come up from the ground.
As the taconite travels on its way, it is heated by tungsten lamps to 600 degrees centigrade.
Up along the corrugated roof there, Earl, you can see the squirrel cages. That's where the squirrels are dying so the people won't have to.
And into the microme vat goes the taconite, where it's converted once again into molten ore. And there it sits simmering for 3 months.
After 3 months there, the molten ore is poured into that little building there at the end of the warehouse. The boys in the line call that little building the magic house.
What happens to the taconite in the magic house, Ben?
Nobody knows for sure. They say inside the magic house are three virtuous maidens, all clothed in white linen. They touch the taconite with birch wands, turning each lump into common household objects.
That's what they say. What really happens, Ben?
You got me, Earl. Whatever it is in there, I just know I got to oil it every day. You can see things coming out of the magic house now. Whoops, too many toothbrushes. I got to go bang on the wall.
What happens next, Ben?
Huh? Oh, the boys in shipping take the objects and box them up.
Sven is right. A product is not a product unless it's in a box.
What's this, Sven? I don't know. I think it's a tire.
It's too big. This box is too big.
Nobody knows what goes into the magic house, but what comes out is no secret to the American consumer.
Small.
All boxed up and ready to go.
Into the trucks, boys.
Onto the trucks.
Into the boxcars, boys.
Onto the boxcars.
Into the homes, boys.
And into our homes.
Here's your record albums and costume jewelry, Mrs. Olson.
God bless you, taconite man.
Yes, God bless taconite, because happy metal means happy products. And happy products mean happy stockholders here at Minnesota Land Invasion, where you are a problem for us.
Where am I? In the village. What do you want? Information. Whose side are you on? That would be telling. We want information. 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 You won't get it. By hook or by crook, we will. Who are you? The new number two. Who is number one?
KZSU, Stanford.
Loop out. Cabin light. Energy.
Stimulus.
Feeder.
Out.
Dream. Monitor.
Out.
Music.
Circus.
Circuit.
In.
11:59:30. Monitor.
Bing.
~1200
Rolling tape.
51.
All right, old buddy. This is the tape you've been waiting for.
wake-up time. You should just be toughening into consciousness now, and you just want to keep still while you warm up. Assuming the system doesn't cut in on us, it ought to take about 3 minutes from now. All right, I'm going to start a count.
100.
You're counting back now. Focus both eyes on the PSI indicator light.
96. 95.
Now, buddy,
94,
I know it's been a long haul for you.
92,
the system should be running some figures now on the vitals.
90,
if you're still in the green, we'll do the memory test.
87.
And restore to con to you, Cap.
85. 84.
Intake 51.
82. 81.
System. Hello, Mark. You are
A-OK.
Punch up. BMF.
Basic manual function.
You are
A-OK.
Mark.
Do not.
Voice operate.
System.
Please. You are
not in.
Control.
52.
Happy New Year, Mark. This is Angela, and we're going to let you wake up to some really schmoozy programming. But first, let's do a memory check. Pipe up. Don't worry about being groggy. I know you'll be doing just fine. I've got a funny one for you. Channel 001. Who was Dewey Duck?
Huh?
System
in.
Your
audio
out.
Repeat.
System
what?
Indicate
failure.
Difficulty.
Failure.
In. Mic drain battery. Repeat.
Ring.
Please.
Testing 4. Testing 5.
Good morning.
Dewey was Donald's nephew. At least that's what he and Daisy claimed. And if anybody's listening down there, I've got a terrible backache here.
That's right, Mark. Now, on the red channel, read the system your vitals.
Mark. Mark. Mark T. Captain. Signs of life. Green, elapsed time of sleep in 24-hour units. 3, 4, 3, 2.
And I'm mighty glad to be awake, too.
Listen, I can remember it.
On center. We'll be seeing you in just a little while.
We're here now, and we'll probably still be home to say hello, old buddy. God, run.
You just do grabs until your muscles come back. The system will roll an exciting new entertainment tape for you. Bye-bye.
Keep sewing, Mark. Intake 52.
System. Hello, Mark. Entertainment
delay.
Check your
audio.
Again, please.
Testing, testing.
Testing. This sounds real bad, system.
Can you plug the drain?
I'm out of communication.
You are.
I'm out of communication.
Failure.
Failure.
Not
A. Difficulty.
Landing phase.
A-OK.
Rolling tape.
53.
Entertainment closeout. Jim and Ellie house fire. Rolling. Any time, Jim.
1, 2, 3.
Cruising down the rivers on a Sunday afternoon.
The years in your ears. Mid-century to century 2000. This is an audio history of your first 50 years, Mark. Prepared for your entertainment by the Graphophone Entertainment Group. In 1950, while you were born like so many others like you, this busy nation hung out a clean hand to the victims of the past and discovered the mouse-tongued enema of tomorrow. Primitive, black-and-white, single-system TWEV obsessed the snowbound American family and you. Nobody wanted to remember anything, but they taught you drop drill. Remember, Nellie?
Yes, Jim. They were the fabulous 50s.
A lavish epoch of rhinestones and chrome set against the basic black of daily life. While your lucky mom drove a hard top and a dishwasher, Pop relaxed with a flat top and his choice of newspapers.
Wasn't that something? But you were too young then to be a juvenile delinquent, and not old enough to care by the time was up for the old gym. Before you could help it, you were growing to adult manhood in the swinging 60s.
By 1960, color was an everyday necessity. That way, within a few short years, the once easy choice between mom and bad and good and dad had to be made in the marketplace of public confusion. Famous heroes came and went. Business improved.
Boy, did it. A few have a nice days afterwards in a wartime frenzy. Americans all over the world went to the moon and back. When the trip was out of sight, they thought they had nothing to show for it but some dirty pictures. And that was what most everybody wanted.
I'll say, Jim, nearing the end of your second decade, Mark, just when it seemed as if everything you had in mind was legal and life was one big suitcase, it was time to get tough again from the top down.
Bring us together.
The sober 70s, soft on the inside, damage-resistant on the outside. A hungry people learned to eat buffalo and crow, while its elected bureaucracy was retired to celebrate the revolution.
Folks young and old began to think more about their mobile homes now that they could watch the recreation of their choice on the new imported double screen. Many believed that God had come back. We all wore old clothes.
I'm still wearing them. And then, after a long string of local fireworks, the first of the oil wars exploded. Business improved. The president needed a volunteer, Mark. You were it. And so the Pegasus leaped skyward that sultry spring morning in 1979.
You were only 30 when you left for Planet X. How old do you think you are now?
Well, that's a question for the computers, dear.
Back here, it was business as usual.
The Irish Israeli crisis.
The near-tragic Latin American devaluation.
The Pacific energy conflict.
The pirate raids of 85 and 86.
Weren't those something? And yet at home, things slowed down a lot. Eco-planning and life system improvement, together with the population stabilization program under President Volt, created the North American Village Movement. By 1988, just as you were entering the orbit of Planet X, political life began to become a thing of the past.
Some called them the empty 80s, but now others are being naughty in the naked 90s. New words like Navshmavkapar,
Boltorama,
Tide Energy,
Zepline,
Simulaser,
Retirement Camp, and new ideas like
Propane,
Equalism,
Divisibility,
Songkwo Runshanyen,
new tourist nations like Amazonia and Namland.
And a few surprises, Mark. For instance, a new head in Rushmore National Park. And final elimination of the combustion engine. 2 years ahead of schedule.
Yes, it's nicer to be alive in 1995.
I'll say.
And it will be a flash to have you back. Sorry we haven't been able to bring you right up to date. But very soon now, the Cape will be shut back, terminating the North American effort in space. Except, of course, for you.
That's right, Mark. And what a time you've missed. It's been entertaining to share it with you on The Years in Your Ears. This is Jim.
And Nellie Houseafire saying,
so long until last time again.
This entertainment brought to you by GEG. Look for graphophone loop holos and magna players everywhere.
I remember rivers, Nellie.
System.
In.
Hello, Mark.
Punch up.
Video assist.
Lead.
Retro.
Orbit.
Successful.
Vehicle.
Recovery.
Now.
In.
Contact.
Bath.
Your.
Landing fail.
Semi.
Niner.
Slang.
Auto.
Big.
Music.
Circus.
Circus.
Circuit.
Happy landing!
Please.
Thank you.
my fellow Americans. It's a far, far better thing. This is the first step. Who's that down there? What?
Okay, push down.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, son, you come in right on time. Hope you ain't disappointed. There ain't more of a reception. My name's Tweety. This whole place is abandoned, you know. Nobody cares anymore. I don't care. It's a government job, though. And they're hard to... Ah, here you are.
Welcome to President's Memorial Space Museum.
Well, they didn't tell me what to expect.
Well, they didn't want to bring you down, I suppose. That's a joke. Bring you down. Lift. How you feel?
Well, I feel... I guess I feel all right. I'd like to get out of this suit.
Suit yourself. I got some soft clothes fixed up for you. Right in the hot room. Over there. You go in, wash up, change... decontaminate yourself, please. I gotta turn on the lights in the old Pegasus hangar. There's a little surprise for you in there.
Really?
Well, not really, but close enough. You gonna be okay?
Yeah, I'm just a little confused. You go ahead and do what you have to do.
Oh, look, I'm just here to help you. Let me hold on to those bulky things for you. Must be the holo log of the trip, right?
Well, that's right. They are a little hard to hold with these... gloves
well,
on.
Well, let me take them off your hands.
All right.
No, no, not the gloves. The tapes.
No, I need to hold on to those.
No, fella. Oh, look at that. You just go get your brains washed. Now pick these things up.
Listen, be very careful.
Yeah,
with those.
Go right in there.
None of them are labeled.
That's okay. Don't worry about a thing.
Listen, those are very valuable.
Close the door behind you. Please close that door. Good. I gotta send this in. Now, let's see. Tape secured. S-E-C. Final program. P. Print back. Okay. Whoa, she's cooking now. Hey, right behind me. Hey, you hungry?
What?
I say, you hungry?
Oh, sure, I could eat something solid.
Coming on the coffee.
Solid coffee? You're grounded now. I got the real thing bubbling here on the flash. You just go ahead and finish that sour.
Hey, listen, what about these big bags?
Now I just better test these waxworks out again.
The time is now 4:44.
There she goes. Oh, real patriotic. A little loud, though. All set. You gonna be much longer?
None of it will be the same.
Oh, no, just come on out like you are.
Hey, did you pick up those tapes?
Ask me no questions. And I'll tell you no lies. No sense leaving them big doors open. Look at them, mother. Oh, oh. That's a little cozier now.
Just leave the waste bags inside. Hey, Tweety? Hey, where are you?
Over here! Look! Surprise! Still too damn loud! That's better.
Rending the curtain of the starry night descends bold Pegasus from distant light. Hail, explorer, hero, friend. Welcome back to Brother Earth again. How appropriate these innocuous words seem beside the big thrill you must feel as you return down home after 20 long and short years, Mark. And what a similar thrill your real friends and employers would feel if they could be with you now in person. Only the inchoate passage of time has rendered this impractical. Here, however, through the miracle of interloid crystal memory and Bolterama, I am honored to introduce your old chief, Intendant General George Gorgon, commander of this space agency, retired.
My version. Welcome back to the blessed blue world, Mark. That's right. We're still waiting for you down here. And all of us, officers and employees alike will be so proud and relieved when you make it home. Well, my boy, heaps of changes have gone right on by in the course of time since 79. So I'll expect you'll have a lot to catch up on in your personal life. And so we won't keep you waiting here too long. I know what a fistful of pressure you've been under out there.
Looks real, don't he?
And of course, your back pay and a bonus is waiting for you, as well as one heck of a U-Sync service pension plan. I want to recommend it to you. Not to mention a tour with the Active Duty Retirement Corps. So, at ease, Mark. And let's keep in touch.
Thank you, George. Now, Mark, let's go to Landfill, California, where the beautiful rock sand pavement, Dark Star of the Mandatory Entertainment Corps, awaits to talk to you.
I am unbelievably honored to be here at remote Indio Perdido Lake near the bank of the lusty Colorado River, where an earth-moving miracle is taking place as far as the eye can see.
What a piece of asphalt.
Yes, Mark. This is Panorama Land 2000, where all of civilization is being gathered together on a desert-contoured, climate-conditioned, and completely re-greened landfill. Wherever you stand, sit or lie in Panorama Land 2000, there will always be something new. As the nation cleans its drawers of the 20th century in preparation for the millennial year of century 2000, it is fitting that you should return on the heels of the century. Naturally, it will be exciting to hear what you have to tell, and even more exciting to show your own story here as an example to others. Congratulations from Panorama Land 2000.
A worldwide production of the Century 2000 Corporation and Walt Dednow Enterprises.
All rights removed.
And now, the honor you've been waiting for. Here is William D. Gazachorn, president of our country.
Like Andrew Carnegie Gazachorn and other great Americans, congratulations on your tough stake. Well done. If you are
president in 95, when they rigged this up, the crowd,
the comfort of my own backyard, it means the welcome and honorable bringing to a conclusion not only of a historic undertaking unequaled in time, but also to our nation's work up in the sky that took shape out of political reality over the generator ago.
Poor bugger's gone
even
now.
Even though we are now passing on to other more conservative, more entertaining uses of our nation's resource systems, your great achievement reflects on all of us, even those of us who are not involved. And so, a proud and mumbled thank you. And I hope that Mrs. Gazachorn and myself and Buddy and Junior Gazachorn can all meet with you in person some afternoon or evening in the future.
Thank you. Let's go.
And he means it too, Mark. And now, your military and technical escort will assist in making you as comfortable as possible after your arrival.
Means me.
When time permits, you will be guided to the nearest transport station or Zeppelin for shipment to any current destination. So, a friendly and personal so long. For now.
So that's it. That's
speaking for the Interloid Company, this has been Freddie Burns.
Well, it's got a mite hazy over the last few years, but it's still a damn good Lloyd for my money. Not that I paid for it.
No, wait. That's so long, Johnny. Glad you could make it. Don't bid us, we'll bid you.
All except for a check and a couple of medals. I put them right there next to your coffee cup.
Oh, dear.
I'll drink to that. Come on, fella. Drink up. Have a little hot lava. I'm Java.
Well, if that's it, Tweenie, then. And here's to our immediate retirement.
Okay. Retirement. What a dear word. Yep. I remember the day They brought the simulaser in here to show that thing first time. It was lonely even then. Nobody had come out to the museum since 89. Too busy.
Greeny,
too much to do at home.
Greeny, this coffee.
Yeah, good and strong. Yeah. That's the way I like it.
I feel faint.
What? He fell right over. Mission accomplished. I better call control before I get deflated by... Oops.
Over there, Manny. They're both out all right. That old tweenie's nothing but a damp rag.
Well, fold him up neat. They might want to use him again. Then take the big guy outside and put him in the sling so Mr. M can hoist him up to the Zep. I'll find the memory loops.
Well, they're probably in the hot room with his face closed.
Nope. These are them all over the floor here.
Hey, give me a hand with the gent's feet, Manny.
All right, all right.
The time is now 5:55.
What about the clock,
time
lady?
To continue to
leave it.
News
they can tell if you turn it off. Look out, you dummy. Hold his head up. I'll come back for the loops later.
Who are you calling a dummy?
Good morning, Tweenie, darling. This is Lady Anne, a happy home service of Adult Systems Unlimited. This morning, we're featuring real coverage of the revolt on Garbage Island. More about the giant parakeets and events as they happen.
The return of Pegasus Alpha in the pre-dawn hours this morning from its 20-year voyage to what was then called Planet X was marked, or marred today, by the apparent abduction of its only occupant, a volunteer Arconaut with no previous experience in outer space. When met by a government tweenie at the abandoned space museum, the pilot was recovering from his artificial welcome and preparing to tell his story to important news people everywhere when he evidently disappeared. Also allegedly missing are the valuable memory loops containing the complete record of the Pegasus' long tour.
Bugs in the water and the biggest birthday cake in the world after this time check from today's favorite energy source, carbon recycling.
At the hole, the time is 6 a.m., Eastern Zip Zone.
Piece of mandatory advice from our Vice President of Pollution Management.
Persons, we are so happy that you've purchased this entertainment loop or capsule from among the millions available. Please never forget that the organization I represent includes the highest interest of citizens who are out for a good time, always, in every product. Now, will you help us, please? Dispose of the packaging materials you have just removed very carefully. Debag them, if possible. They are very slightly radioactive in order to preserve the recorded signals with over 99% fidelity. This warning is not approved for children. Thank you.
Now listen to these instructions carefully. This is not a toy. Properly used, it can provide many hours of dimensional entertainment, both interesting and fun-filled, as well as completely adult in every way. Remember, follow directions and hunt only when ready. A. Debag packaging materials. B. Insert your unit coupling into slot A. C. Remove plastic nut holder. D. Plug in. Remember, energy is power, and power is everybody's business. So, we suggest that you turn off any device not appropriate to your lifestyle. If you have followed these simple steps, you are now in full control of your loophole or bid capsule. The M strip you can see traveling under the protective window is the image source. So, have a good time. Thanks to the bold folks at Graphophone Entertainment Group. To eliminate these instructions, simply press your spreader. Now.
Testing emergency portable AV recall system. Memory loop one, starting with this mark.
Black hole could be a gravity vacuum. It pulled the Pegasus right out of orbit. Seems to be a delay in the transfer circuit somewhere. I'll repeat that. The system won't operate, and we're descending rapidly, making adjustments on a course right for Planet X. And there's the planet, that sandy-colored semi-sphere tilting up on the left there. It appears to have one moon, but it's gone around the edge now. It looked like it was all water to me. I don't want to waste this portal loop, so I'll stop here. No sensation of motion. Oh, damn. I think the gravity waves are affecting this recall unit. Anyway, I'll focus out now there on the surface. It looks like Pismo Beach with no water out there, and we're coming in fast. Situation report? I sure wish I had some company and some good dope. Otherwise, I feel fine. Okay.
They said you were crazy, General, but you were right. This is the first contact between man, me, and alien people. Or it will be in a couple of minutes. I sure hope these pictures are going into loop storage, because this recall is still not working very well, and I banged it up getting out. I'm set up looking out across a big oily sump here and away from the sand dune the Pegasus landed in. And by the way, gentlemen, there's another spacecraft over there, and it isn't one of ours. Oh, all right, those moving figures out there, that's them. It's hard to see in the magnetic light. The colors and images are all slippery. They seem to be flying toward me with the sand blowing and billowing up all around them. Well, they are flying. Look at that!
Great galaxies, look at that. Focus up on that incredible face, Manny.
Okay, sir. There, fine as a gnat's hair, Mr. M.
Manny, we possess the first close-up gram of a man from outer space.
Gee, sure looks pretty. Say, maybe it's a woman from outer space.
Whichever, this is the preservation of an historic moment. Seems like our traveling amigo is coming out of his coffee slumber. Switch off that Planet X loop, Manny, and give him the birds.
Here comes the birds.
Yes. Duck the sparrows.
Sparrows duck.
Filter the ducks.
Filter ducks.
Now punch up the forest awakens.
Oh, boy.
Orange in the sun. Focus the trees. Good. Now we're ready. Now it's time for our guest to awaken. Tell him to wake up, shortstop.
Up and at him, spaceman. Up and at him, spaceman.
Landing. Look out.
That's right, Mark. Sit up. Look at the wonders of nature all around you and try to see my sleight of hand in front of your eyes.
I was dreaming. I thought I was back on Planet X.
Planet X is but a dream image now, space traveler.
Where's the old man? What time is it?
Tell our amigo the time, shortstop.
Either 6 to 9 or 9 to 6.
Poor shortstop, he never learned to read out. But pardon me, you haven't met my crew or myself. I am the multitacular Mr. Motion, master of amazination. Vast as my reputation. Thank you. That ambient noise there by the twinkling huckleberry tree is my very revendable shortstop.
Anything he can say, I can say louder.
And standing behind that undulating gorse bush is Manny Grossero. He, like the shortstop, is of my own creation. Say hello, Manny.
Good night, Gracie.
Oh, hopeless robot.
I must be in a time lag. This is a deja vu.
No, Mark. Some of this is real, I assure you.
But what about these little guys, these robots, puppets? What are they?
Oh, they have no strings, amigo. They are totally independent misters, MRs, multiple rebendables, my own process. Thank you.
Just a minute now. Just a second. Where's the old codger with the coffee? Where did he go? And what am I doing in the woods? This is some retirement.
He was just a tweeny, Mark, a blow-up government man in an overblown government job. I didn't program him. I just took advantage of the situation. Why, but for me, the incredible pictures you brought back would have long already been lost. Instead, they have joined my exquisite collection.
But you can't show those loops.
Oh, we can now. We spent all morning tuning the Amazination system to deflect them with some degree of tridimensionality.
You mean you have playback circuits for...
Circus? You should have seen the circus I used to have. Playing up and down the Rocky Mountains, the first Zepp carnival in the world, always arrived disguised as a thunderstorm. Motion is how people have no...
No, I meant circuits.
I know what you meant, amigo. Certainly. I have the necessary equipment. You've been away a long time. It's all astro surplus now. Everybody's got the stuff. But only we have the perfect image of Planet X.
Well, we seem to be the only people who are interested
in a manner of speaking. Oh, you could go down to New City, but it's all news all the time down there. Anything you might have to say would be just as important as anything else. The news, shortstop.
Brazilian bees sighted off coast. Man returns from outer space. Robots win 13-7. Ho, ho, who cares?
Well, they care, don't they?
Only for each other, amigo. No, only free floaters like myself are entertained by entertainment of this quality.
But this is not entertainment. This is real.
Amigo, it's all entertainment. You went on location, took sophisticated equipment, and made pretty pictures of what you saw. That's entertainment. Trouble is, the government thinks it'll confuse people. Kill the birds, Manny.
Right you are, Mr. Motion. Bang, bang.
What?
Ah, thought you were outdoors, did you not, amigo? Dim out the sun, Manny. Ah, such is the patented miracle of Amaze Nation, realer than life itself. And now, voila, this is my living room, moving west at a reasonable speed and at a safe altitude somewhere over...
Grand Canyon Heights.
This is an aircraft?
I told you I used to run a Zepp show. This is the Zepp. Her name is Gilda. She's triple-hulled and runs on sun power and, like most women, is entirely self-contained. Thus, I travel in comfort and move hardly at all. I can, of course, simulate virtually any environment I choose, inside or outside. Manny?
Humpa-gumpa, boss.
Let us continue with the show, if you please.
Now, just a minute.
What?
All I've had since I woke up is one show after another. Not to mention being knocked out and kidnapped by these robots. Now, the loops are public property. Somebody in the space department is going to want to know where they are. And besides, some of them are pretty damn personal.
Amigo, the tattered remnants of government were sending you to a remote retirement camp and would have put those marvelous pictures in atomic storage underneath the Pacific Ocean. Proof of life on Planet X, I assure you, is better left with me. Only a select audience of trusted friends will see these images. Copies will be sold to the few who can afford to collect such rarities.
Put this blimp down and let me off.
Blimp! Do you think this is a blimp? Manny!
Come tiki, Mr. M!
Show our amigo what Miss Gilda can do. Play Planet X.
Here goes, boss!
I've launched the flag and sent up the signal flares, but it's no use. They don't seem to see me. Mounted on those rippling sheets or carpets of energy. Look at them go. Hey! Earth says hello! Hello! No, it's no use. They don't seem to be able to hear or see me. The energy carpets are settling down now out there by the alien spacecraft. I'll just swivel this thing around so you can see. Ah, there it is. God, it looks like a gas station out there. The machine has great pipes coming out of it, burrowing down into the sump. I think it's sucking fluid out of the sand, replenishing its fuel supply, maybe. This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. The aliens seem to be attacking the machine. Flashes of energy go bouncing off the fuel pipes. The ship is spitting oil back at the people, and the little fires are breaking out all over the sand there. One alien seems to be making a daredevil attack from his carpet on the Pegasus. Hey, if you break that, there's no way in hell I'll ever get back to Earth. Stop! Stop!
Try to please hang on. Please. This is an official interruption of your local entertainment transmission. Repeat, this is an emergency program override from News City Central in News City, Nevada. What? Please welcome Dr. Progresso Sweetheart of Santa Angela Technical University into your home leisure area for an urgent scientific explanation. Dr. Sweetheart.
Persons, a hole of the black persuasion in the wall of space has been discovered and it's moving towards you on Earth at a very high rate of speed. Now, what does this mean? First, it means that the universe is now collapsing. And secondly, we have every reason to believe that on or about the first or second of next year, this, hole will pass through our part of the galaxy. Or perhaps it would be more accurate to say our part of the galaxy will pass through it. Scientifically speaking, this could smell the end to civilization as we know it. Or, on the other hand, we may certainly have a conclusive answer soon to the question of infinity. Stay tuned and thanks.
And thank you, Doctor. This is Continuous Emergency Program Override. now on a reduced power basis.
Bingle is ready.
At this time, we proudly take you right through to senior commentator W.C. Bingle, currently riding the thrilling Jungle Bug Ride at Panoramaland 2000.
An astounding report from Dr. Sweetheart, which appeared to transfix nearly a million Panoramaland guests, residents, and entertainers. From here, with a view toward the southeast, we could see all the varied amusement sources suddenly overload, and many entire buildings and such major points of interest as the Snowy Alps vanish before our eyes, only to be replaced by the handsome, benign face of that noted scientist.
Hey, Walter, baby.
Yeah, Jim, is this Jim Dundee over the Great Wall of China?
Hi, Macy, you bet your life, baby. That's right, I'm down here with the world's most popular drinking areas, you understand? The South Polar Lounge. Yes. Where everything is nice, and they do it twice. And everybody here is waiting for the million-dollar jackpot number to come up, man. And you know there's a lot of sincere confusion about just what the doctor said.
Do they appear to be concerned about the certain astronomical crisis?
Oh, they say too much too soon.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes, yes.
You know, as I look down over St. Peter's Square, teeming with a capacity audience, the ever-changing wonderland of vistas still blinking and flashing back into action.
Far
to my
baby.
Right is the beautifully recreated Taj Mahal just fading back in. Mm. Well, I'm impressed most of all with the serene mood, the lack of comprehension.
I can dig it, man. Right on, right on. Oh, I know what you're saying, Bingo. These folks that come here have invested a lot of credit in having a fine time while the time is right.
Here's news in the making, Joe. Reporter Arnie Zonker, stationed over an Eiffel Tower parking, says...
Say it.
He's been talking with a Zeppelin transport officer who swears the missing Pegasus pilot returned with alien monsters.
Oh, God!
And that half the country is already in their hands.
Oh.
Your claws.
Oh, great, sound like the end of the world all over again, man. 6 to 5 of the waking people I talk to want to know who's going to take the responsibility, Bingo.
Do you remember anything like it, Jack?
Yeah, not since 69.
Sorry to interrupt, but we're going out to Chiquita Bandana in Monument Valley.
Out there, where the wind is heavy.
Thank you, and hello, Walter. I'm in the torch room of the Statue of Liberty right now, one of the tallest of the monuments here. And immediately to my right, I think you can see the enormous old-fashioned Zeppelin just settling slowly into a docking position between these two historic landmarks. Pulses of high energy are flickering and crawling all over the surface of the Zepp, and weird figures have appeared in the air around it. It's very close now. I can see a figure in the window. It's only
there.
About 20 feet above me.
Hold this!
He's dropping down a rope!
Hold on!
I think I have to hold on.
Look out!
Walter!
Below.
Walter!
Oh, get a hold of that, friends. What an unbelievable scene. You just would not believe it. The Zepp appears to be exploding. But wait a minute. No, it's as if a sandstorm was billowing around it. Now, wait a minute. Let me see here. Got to get my binoculars straight. And in the midst, there's a spaceman there. You see him there? An American spaceman just struggling with an alien being. Faces, they look like they're naked. And it's like, now it's floating free, and the two figures tumbling over and over in a desperate conflict. Wait a minute. Now back to Monument Valley.
Jack, the Zepp has torn loose from its mooring here in the wake of that great electrical battle, and it's floating off now past the Eiffel Tower, very near the Stonehenge Beltway.
It's got my dream loops. There's a lot of personal, intimate things in
Mark,
those things.
Mark! You're the man who went to sleep for your country so many years ago.
Those
can you explain what you're doing here in Panorama Land?
I mean, look at the aliens, for example. Look at that one humping the entire state building. They do that all the time.
Mark, can you tell us what happened when you returned to Earth?
Am I speaking to everyone?
That's right, Mark.
Well, it's about time. It's a far, far better thing I'm doing now.
Control.
System.
What?
You are
in
black hole.
You are
A-OK.
Mark.
11:58.
Circuit successful.
Landing.
Mark.
Eleven 58:30.
What was some sort of scary science fiction? What do you think, Vamprilla?
Well, I think probably technology is the scariest thing of them all. And that was certainly a scary hi-fi sci-fi comedy. Don't you think, Count?
Oh, very, very, very. But we have more from outer space. Here is a pre-recorded ancient ensemble of mock rogers in the 20th century.
Right.
At the count, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Rogers in the 25th century, with its prophecy of all the wonderful things that may occur 500 years from now. Do you ever give any really serious thought to the scientific and mechanical developments of the future? Well, just keep listening to Buck Rogers and you'll have a pretty good idea of many of the things that are within the realm of scientific possibility. All right, now, without wasting any time, we're going to pick up our story on the surface of the moon, just as Buck and Wilma discovered that they'd been tricked by Killer Kane and Ardela. Now, here we go, 500 years into the future.
Look out, our rocket ship, it's gone.
Oh, that rocket blast knocked me over.
Clear, get up quick. Kane and Ardela must have hidden behind some of these rocks out here. And they sneaked into our ship as soon as we left it.
But they've got Dr. Hewer aboard with them. We've got to go after them.
Right. And we'll use this ship of Kane's.
Well, go ahead. Get into it and take the controls.
I said that a chase between these two equal ships was of no use. But this time, there's nothing else to do. Here now. Close the metal door and we'll get underway.
Can you still see our blue ship from the teleradioscope, Ardela?
Yes, Kane. Buck and Wilma have just gone into it.
So they can head right out here after us, of course. We'll wait until they take off their spacesuits to operate the controls.
What did you do?
Left the slow generating gas pot under the control seat. It'll poison them before they know what's happened to them.
Good work. Say, you must have hit Dr. Hewer pretty hard while he was getting out of his spacesuit. See, he's still out cold.
Then we won't need to worry about him for a while. As a matter of fact, from now on, he can do all the worrying.
How do you mean?
Hewer's next job will be to invent a new weapon for me. And it will have to be something I can use to bring a whole planet to its knees in a single stroke.
Isn't that asking a lot, Kane?
For a man like you, huh?
No. What I'm thinking of is trying to persuade him to do it.
I have an idea that when I show him how much he can accomplish under my direction, he may be perfectly willing to play along with us.
All right. Now, where are we headed for?
Ardela, we're going to Enceladus.
That's one of the moons of Saturn, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of the least known moons of Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
But I've decided that it will provide a good nucleus for the organization I will build up to carry out my plans.
Why pick Enceladus?
Because there we can work without any chance of being disturbed or interfered with.
Mm-hmm. That sounds logical.
Oh, my head.
Wait, Hewer's coming too.
Buck, where are you? Wilma.
Shall I throw some water on his face?
No, let him come out of it in his own sweet way.
Killer Kane.
Hello, you are. How are you?
Well, what have you done? Where are Buck and Wilma?
I'm sorry, Dr. Hewer.
Ardela.
But I'm afraid it was necessary to leave them stranded down on the moon.
Stranded?
Well,
Yes. Yes, the power control on that blue ship down there is out of water.
Oh.
Now, how do you feel?
As good as could be expected under the circumstances. Do you really care?
You are. I'm a man of few words, so I'm going to speak bluntly.
Well,
you know what my plans for conquest of the solar system amount to. Or at least you ought to know by this time.
Yes, Kane. I know your wild ideas only too well.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes.
Nobody realizes any more than I do your capabilities as a scientist. In short, with your cooperation, the conquest I desire will be easy. And if you seriously stop to think about it, you'll realize that working with me will not only give you more wealth than you've ever dreamed of, but a chance to make scientific progress such as you've never had before. The whole solar system will be your laboratory. You will be the greatest scientist who ever lived.
Kane, I'm not the least bit interested in what you're saying.
Huh?
Nothing under heaven could ever persuade me to be a partner to your crime.
You are. Either you'll come along with me, or you'll die. As Rogers and Wilma have died.
What? Well, what are you talking about?
You heard what I said.
But before you said... You only said that the ship you left them in back there on the moon was disabled.
Of course, so you wouldn't feel any animosity toward me when I made my little proposition to you. Do you think I'm a fool? What good would disabling their ship do us? No, you are. Our little situation required somewhat more drastic measures.
What did you do?
Beneath your dear friend Buck's control seat is a small beaker of chemicals, which right now are generating a deadly gas.
Oh.
In other words, when he and Wilmer take off their spacesuits to operate that ship, it will begin to have its effect on them. Not too quickly, either. So they'll have no warning until it's too late. Clever, huh?
You're not human.
Really? Thank you.
Kane, you're a monster.
Yes, you are. And I'll give you the same medicine if you try to cross me. Now use your head, you old fogey. You've got a decision to make. On the one hand, wealth, fame, and power. On the other, burial in outer space. Well, will you play along with me?
Never. Let me hit that radio unit.
Sure.
I've got to warn them.
Get away from the radio.
Not like you.
Nice work with the paralysis ray, Ardela. I congratulate you.
Thanks, Kane. Whether you'll admit it or not, Hewer was in a fair way of knocking you down.
I wouldn't say exactly that. But the old boy does pack more of a wallop than I gave him credit for. But it's the last one he'll ever throw.
But now listen.
Well?
I can't seem to spot it on the viewplate now. Perhaps because we're out of range.
Enceladus?
No, the rocket ship we left on the moon. Just before you and Hewer started to scrap, I saw it take off. Maybe your little trick hasn't worked after all.
So soon? Of course not. Knowing Rogers, I know that he'd take off after us without waiting to remove his spacesuit. But he certainly wouldn't continue to fly with it on, or Wilmer either. And when they do remove them, they'll have nothing more to worry about.
You ask me, Wilma, that's the fastest takeoff we ever made. Now, let's get out of these spacesuits so we won't have to talk by radio.
Are we going in the same direction that Kane took?
Yeah. So spot his ship in the teleradioscope as fast as you can.
Hard to tell what focusing range to... Oh, there it is.
Good. I see it. And we're going straight after it.
Thank goodness he's flying a straight course, though.
Huh?
Notice how clouds of cosmic dust keep interfering with the vision on this viewplate?
Yeah. Too bad he got such a head start on us. But, Wilma, he's heading straight up toward Mars or Saturn. They happen to be in line with each other.
No, I can't see a ship at all. Look, if he swings around out there very much, we're going to lose him, do you know it?
Well, we don't need to. We can hook in the gas analyzer and automatically follow his rocket trail.
Great, I'll get it for you right away.
Get it for me?
Sure, out of this cabinet over here.
But it's right here on the control board. See these dials? There, turned it on.
Then what's this unit here on this shelf?
Oh, that's just an auxiliary unit in case this one gets out of order. Leave it there.
Oh.
See? These dials register 3, 1.7, and 32.1.
Uh-huh.
Kane's rocket trail, all right. From now on, this ship will follow it automatically.
Good. But say, let's get out of these space suits.
Yes, let's. Breathing condensed air gets tiresome.
They're not exactly comfortable in the control cabin, either. Unsnap my helmet clamps for me.
Sure. No, wait a second.
Where are you going?
Didn't close the door of this cabinet tight. For that, you can open your own helmet.
All right. Anything to breathe pure air again.
Wait, stop.
Huh?
Keep on that helmet.
Are you trying to get me? Ouch!
Told you to keep that helmet on. You see that auxiliary gas analyzer there in the cabinet?
What's the matter, Buck?
Cyanogen gas. Something very much like it here in this control cabin.
What?
According to dial one on this analyzer, it's slowly been getting stronger and stronger in here. Right now, there's enough to kill us instantly.
Buck!
More of Killer Kane's work. Somewhere in this control cabin. Here it is. See this beaker?
Right under your control seat.
Yes. Pouring out a gas intended to get us the minute we took off our spacesuits. Snap your helmet clamp tight again.
What are you going to do?
Throw this beaker out the main metal door.
While we're tearing along like this?
Yes, sir. Boy, did you feel the air in this cabin rush out when I opened that door?
Yes, Buck. The pressure in here is returning to normal again.
Well, that helped to clear the gas out, too. Thank heaven for the auxiliary gas analyzer.
Yes, it's back to normal again.
Well, then we can take off these helmets safely.
I'm almost afraid to.
No, it's okay now. Here, I'll help you. There you are. Here goes my helmet.
Now that it's all over, Buck, I feel sort of funny.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If you really think about it, it was a pretty close call for us.
Too close. Killer Kane and Ardela won't stop at anything. The president was right, Buck, when he said that this is the most dangerous assignment he ever gave us.
And we're seeing it through.
We know how far Killer Kane will go to get what he wants, so we're going to play mighty safe every step of the way. But we're not going to waste any time.
We can't waste any time. Keep the power on full. Dr. Hewer is a prisoner aboard their ship, Buck. After what they tried to do to
us. Don't worry, Wilma. We'll get to him. We're on a clear rocket trail that can't miss. Maybe these two ships are exactly alike, but there are a few tricks of navigation that even Killer Kane doesn't know.
Yes, and I'll bet Buck and Wilma do get to Dr. Hewer and rescue him from the arch criminals. But how? And I wonder what Buck meant when he said that there are a few tricks of navigation that Killer Kane doesn't know. Well, sir, it looks at the moment as though Killer Kane and Ardela, the arch criminals, are one up on Buck and Wilma. To begin with, they succeeded in stealing Buck's super rocket ship and Dr. Hewer with it. Now they're flying at top speed through outer space toward one of the 10 moons of the planet Saturn. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles behind them, Buck and Wilma doggedly follow the criminals' rocket trail, determined to rescue Dr. Hewer at any cost. But now let's pick up our story in the rocket ship of Kane and Ardela. Here we go, 500 years into the future.
You are still under the influence of the paralysis ray, Ardela?
Yes, Kane. He's still out cold, back in the storage compartment.
Good. Now, we've left Mars far behind, and the moons of Saturn are dead ahead of us. From the minute we land on the one called Enceladus, we start building our organization.
Enceladus, huh?
Right. It's one of the least known moons of Saturn, so we'll be perfectly safe there.
If we aren't being followed out here...
Nobody's seen us. How could we be?
By a rocket plane equipped with a gas analyzer.
You're right, Ardela. I hadn't thought of it.
Well, it's about time you did.
Don't let it worry you. Watch.
Why'd you cut the power? What are you going to do?
Before cutting the power, I swung us wide from our course.
Huh? Hey, take it easy, will you?
Pipe down and hold tight to your control seat. By the time I'm through, there isn't a gas analyzer in existence that will be able to follow the trail of this ship.
Hey, let me know when you're going to do that, will you?
This is something that even your dear departed friend Rogers wouldn't have thought of.
James' rocket trail still leads in the direction of Mars and Saturn, Buck.
Yeah. A few more hours of flying at this speed, and we should be able to spot his ship in the teleradioscope.
I'll try another look on the viewplate now.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, how about it?
No, I guess we're just not close enough yet. Or else there's too much cosmic dust in the way.
Well, don't worry about it. As long as this rocket trail holds out, there's nothing... Wilma.
What's the matter, Buck?
The rocket trail has stopped.
But we've got to keep on Killer Kane's
track. Now look.
What?
Now the dials register again.
Yes, I'm lucky, Dr.
Oh, sir, it can mean only one thing.
Huh?
Kane has deliberately swerved his ship around to make a crooked trail. Listen to our motors as we follow it.
It doesn't make very comfortable flying.
No, it doesn't, but... Now look. The trail is gone completely.
Can't you pick it up again?
I'm afraid not, Wilma. This is one of Kane's old tricks, and believe me, a clever one. Out here, where there's no air friction, his momentum is enough to carry him literally thousands of miles between short bursts of power. Maybe hundreds of thousands of miles.
Ardela, things are working out beautifully.
Yes, Kane?
While you were giving your another dose of the paralysis ray, I contacted the king of Enceladus by radio.
Good.
His name is Korax, and I told him that we are Rogers and Wilma.
No.
That we're coming to see him on important official business.
Did Korax ever know Buck and Wilma?
He's heard about them, but never seen them.
Marvelous.
Now, we'll land at his capital in a few minutes. On the private landing platform atop his palace.
Oh, the king has been impressed with our importance even before he's seen it.
Exactly. Thinking that we're Rogers and Wilma, he's all ready to eat right out of our hands.
Kane, I hand it to you. You certainly have a pretty little way of pulling the wool over people's eyes and making them like it.
Forget it. Are you sure you gave Yor enough of the paralysis ray to keep him out of trouble?
He's saturated with it. Can't even wiggle his ears.
Good. Now, see? There's the capital right below us. I'll cut the power and coast to a landing.
Somebody down there waiting for us on that platform.
Yes, it must be King Korai. Hang on now. Now, don't forget, I'm Rogers and you're Wilma.
Okay, let's get out.
Welcome. Welcome to Enceladus, the most progressive moon of Saturn, Captain Rogers.
Now, how are you, Korai? Meet her. Lieutenant Wilma Derrick.
Oh, greetings.
How do you do, Your Majesty?
I am honored in having you here. Yes, sir, honored.
Well, let's not waste time with formalities, Korax. Where can we talk?
Why, right through this door here in my private study. Lieutenant?
Thank you.
Here we can be comfortable and undisturbed.
Fine. This will make good headquarters for the work we'll have to do while we're here.
While I think of it, Captain.
Well?
I understand that when you and Lieutenant Wilma visited the moons of Saturn before, you brought along a gentleman who was a very wonderful scientist. The man who developed the system of government under which our moons now function.
Well, he means Dr. Huer.
Yes, that's it, Dr. Huer. Where is he now?
Why, he came with us.
Oh, yes.
But, on the way, he developed a strange illness that has, shall we say, rendered him totally unconscious.
How terrible.
Right now, he is in our rocket plane, so I don't want anyone to go near it. You must have complete and undisturbed rest.
Well, isn't there something we can do for him?
Nothing, Korax, except leave him entirely alone.
Whatever you say, I'm sure you know what is best for him.
Right. Now, let's get down to business.
Yes. Yes, Captain Rogers.
Huh? Yes. Now, Lieutenant Wilma and I are here as delegates of the Interplanetary Council of Science.
Yes.
Our scientists have discovered that a large unexplored planet far out of the solar system is planning to invade all the others with which we've established contact.
Oh.
In any event, Korax, our job is to organize a space fleet that will be the most powerful ever assembled.
Of course, I can see that.
And we must have an army composed of every able man on every moon of Saturn. That army will be under my leadership, of course.
Of course. And, Captain, I shall waste no time in informing the kings of the other Saturnian moons that you are here and that they are to take all orders from you.
And you believe they'll cooperate?
Oh, no question about it, none. Everybody knows what you and Lieutenant Wilma and Dr. Huer did for us when you were here before.
Fine, fine. Now, when you inform the kings of the magnificent project we're about to undertake, tell them they must immediately effect censorship of all interplanetary news channels.
Why that, Captain?
Korax, no one outside of the Council and the people of the Saturnian moons know what is going on.
What?
Why, on the other planets, it would cause nothing short of panic.
Oh, I see.
Now, before going any further, I want it understood that you are to be my official representative.
Oh, well, that is an honor I'm afraid I don't deserve.
Don't be so modest, Korax.
Well, thank you.
You will receive any and all delegates from the other moons that are involved in our plans. It will save me a great deal of time.
I shall serve you to the best of my ability. And if you'll pardon me, I think I'll contact the other kings right away.
Fine, fine. As long as this is going to be our headquarters, we'll stay right here.
Oh, certainly. By all means.
Well, I'm glad that part of the job is over.
You certainly swallowed everything you said, King.
Call me Buck.
Okay. You know, Buck and Wilma apparently rated pretty high with these folks. They're willing to do anything you say.
Well, compared to Earth people, these folks are all a bunch of weaklings. Shout at them once or twice, and they'll do anything you say.
But why did you want Korax to arrange it so you wouldn't have to receive the other thing, King? I should think you'd want to talk to them personally.
Some of them might remember our faces from our previous visit. Then we'd be in hot water.
Okay. Now, what's the next step?
We're going to put these people to work building spaceships.
I see.
With all the manpower that's available, it should be only a matter of days before we'll have a powerful enough space fleet to face anybody in the solar system who might try to make trouble for us.
Calling Black Barney.
Buck Rogers calling Black Barney.
You can land on Mars whether you get him or not, Buck.
But if we don't have to land, it'll save us a lot of space traveling.
That's true.
Calling Black Barney.
Hello. Hello, Captain Rogers. How are you?
Hello, Barney.
Why, I haven't heard from you since we got back from exploring under the Earth. But I understand you're looking for Killer Kane and our dealer.
Right. Have you seen any sign of him?
Yes, sir. And I don't think you better waste any time if you want to catch him.
You know where they are?
Well, Captain, with them crooks on the loose, the minute I got back here to Mars, I got everything all organized out and fixed up a fleet of space patrol.
Yes.
And just yesterday, one of the pilots seen a strange super rocket ship flying out towards a little plasteroid.
You mean planetoid?
Yeah, a plasteroid. It lays about 14 points west of here in the same orbit as Mars has.
Good.
With this teleradioscope and sharp focus, he could see that the Killer Kane headed right towards Saturn.
Great. So you sent patrol ships after it.
Well, Captain, I was sort of afraid to...
What? You mean you let him get away?
Well, Captain, if getting things all organized out in such a hurry, I forgot to equip any of my patrol ship with rocket guns or anything.
Well, poor old Barney. But at least our friends are on the trail again. So sit tight for a few words from your favorite announcer, and then we'll pick up our story.
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
Labios negros, ella, Lupe, piel de luna, piernas largas.